Well, desire and interest in your prayers and your attention today. Would like to talk about something very fundamental. Have you ever tried to explain something to someone that was clueless about what you were trying to explain? This past week, I had a person come in, and they were to the shop, and they were concerned about a noise that they were hearing from their car, and their concern was that a wheel was going to come off, which would be a high level of concern. You don't want one of your four wheels to come off. So I went for a ride with them, and what was making the noise was a strut pivot bearing. Now, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands, but my guess is that not everybody here knows what a strut pivot bearing is. So then I said, well, it's the bearing on top of the strut on the front of the car. And this person said, I don't know nothing about a car. I said, I'm thinking to myself, how am I going to explain to this person what the function of a strut pivot bearing is and reassure them that the wheel is not fixing to come off of the car, that they can drive it, that it's safe to go down the road. And really, it wasn't so much the bearing as it was a piece of rubber on it that was probably rubbing on the body. I'm just squeaking. It was kind of a squeaking sound. It wasn't a terrible rattle or clunk or anyway. So I ended up telling them, trying to use a door hinge to explain a strut bearing, because they knew what a door hinge was, okay? So we sometimes use things for illustrations. We're trying to maybe get a spiritual context. And we make an assumption. Now, if the setting was different, if all of you were mechanics by trade and I said the strut pivot bearing's making a noise, I could just move on. I would have to give no explanation. You would know what I was talking about, right? But if you don't, then you have to build the foundation. You have to start with something that people, the group understands. We've got to start somewhere where we're all on the same playground. We're all on the same page. You know, it's pretty difficult for you to just tell me how to spell a word if we're not speaking the same language. If everybody here spoke a different language, and we were up here trying to teach you how to spell a word, and you didn't even know the letters of the alphabet, that'd be difficult, wouldn't it? We need to start somewhere so we're on the same page. So there are a number of scriptures, and I did not know before I came here what our Sunday school lesson was going to be about, but I did not know that it was going to be touching on finances or money. But money and the use of money there's references to that in the scripture, and many times it's used as a common understanding. Okay? But if we make the assumption that everybody understands the concept, and we go on and try to give a spiritual application, sometimes we can get in trouble. Okay? A lot of times we can get in trouble. I could ramble on to you about the effects and the dynamics of a strut pivot bearing, and you could kind of nod and hope you catch it before the end. Okay? I'm just bringing that up because it was a real thing that happened to me this week. So I would like to talk to us about something that the marker will work on. I'll try a different one. But they're not any good. Okay, I'll just tell you. I want us to talk about saving, spending, and investing. The Bible say anything about that? It does. So I'd like to start out by turning to Matthew, the 6th chapter, and I want to read the 19th verse beginning. And this is in a section of the scripture that's referred to as the Sermon on the Mount. And if anybody wants to debate whether or not Jesus was ever taught about used any financial references, it's in the Sermon on the Mount. That's all I got to say. 19th verse, it says, "Lay not up for yourselves treasures upon earth, where moth and rust doth corrupt, and where thieves break through and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where the thieves do not break through nor steal. For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." So, what does it mean to to lay up? Lay up treasures. What do you think he's alluding to here? Somebody store up. Have some reserve. You know, it's nice to have enough food in the house that you can have a meal if when you're hungry, right? Anita and I visited a home one time, and we were just, they'd invited us there for a meal, and we were sitting at the table, and the wife of the home had went over, and they opened the refrigerator, and I've never seen a refrigerator in a house where people had lived for very long that was this empty. I mean, there was room in there. You could have went grocery shopping and brought in several sacks, and they would have all fit in the refrigerator. All of my life, I've grown up with, you got to make room for something you want to put in there. I don't know how your refrigerator is, and I'm not picking on refrigerators this morning. But I just know that our refrigerator at my house, you wouldn't You could just eat out of the refrigerator probably. There's enough in there for at least a meal, maybe several. So to lay up means that you have something, there's a reserve there. Jesus said he's using the application of having treasures or finances or assets in this world, and he's using that to teach us that spiritual assets and spiritual resources is what's the most valuable thing. But what about the thing he's using for an illustration? You know, I can use something, maybe we could start, find a common denominator among us, something we're all familiar with. And this morning I just want to talk about the common denominator of finances. We all have to deal with it, right? We're all using the same currency here this morning. We all, most likely, all of us have a wallet that has something in it. May not have a lot. Doesn't have to have a lot necessarily all the time. But we, in fact, I don't know a lot, I don't know many people that carry a lot of cash. So, but we usually have a few dollars with us. We all, if I said euros or pesos or something like that, you would say, what good would they do me? You can't go to Walmart, you can't go to McDonald's and pay with pesos. In Mexico you could, but not in Web City. All right? So I would like to turn now to 2 Corinthians, the 12th chapter, and want to notice what the Apostle Paul said about or reference he made here to money, to finances. 2 Corinthians chapter 12, I would like to go to verse 14. He says, behold, third time I am ready to come to you, and I will not be burdensome to you, for I seek not yours, but you. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. And I will very gladly spend and be spent of you, though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved. But be it so, I did not burden you. Nevertheless, being crafty, I caught you with God. He was trying to have you ever tried to teach your children something by pretending that you were agreeing with a wrong principle that they had in their head, and let them lead them on for a while and then say, no, but that's not right. We don't do that's, you know what I'm talking about? So what's the Apostle Paul talking about here? He says, behold, the third time I'm ready to come to you, and I will not be burdensome to you, for I seek not yours. What's he not seeking? He's not looking for their money. He's not looking for their financial support. He says, but you. What he's interested in is their soul. We come here not for the money. We come here for our soul's welfare. We don't. Sometimes I wonder if we could fill the front pews better if we charge more for a front row seat. I mean, where is the most expensive? I think sometimes that church services seem to value the back seats more than the front seats. But if you paid for the most expensive ticket to a Kansas City Royals sports event, where would it be? It wouldn't be in the back. It wouldn't be at the top of the bleachers. You'd be right up next to the fence. You'd be right next to... So, I don't know. What should we charge for a front row seat? He said, I didn't come here for that. But I came here because I'm interested in your soul. You see, he's using finances to teach them something spiritual. He said, for the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. What is he talking about? We're still talking about laying up, right? Other scripture, Jesus says, to don't lay up treasures on the earth. That's the most important thing, is to lay up treasures in heaven. But the underlying principle is to have some reserve. How comfortable is it to feel, how comfortable do you feel if the balance at your bank account is less than $100 and you got less than $10 in your wallet? Does that make you feel very comfortable? I doubt any of us here would say, why don't we go shopping? We're not going to do that, right? Because we don't have anything laid up. At least I hope you wouldn't. All right. So it says here, the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. The concept here is, these children here, they're depending on the parents providing, making sure there's cottage cheese in the refrigerator, making sure there's whatever juice that they enjoy in the refrigerator, making sure that there's resources enough to put clothes on them and shoes on their feet and keep the air conditioner on so they can sleep comfortable at night. And you know, all of those things, it's the parents' responsibility, and he's using the concept of finances to teach them something spiritual. He said, I'm willing to be spent. He's willing to spend his energies, spend his talents, so that... you can prosper. And he says something very poignant here, in that he says, though the more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved. You ever felt underappreciated? You can be underappreciated as a minister, as a parent, as a sibling. But Paul said, I'm willing to do it. I'm willing to lay up. I'm willing to invest. I'm willing to spend. He's talking about spiritual things, but he's using this fundamental concept of laying up. So let's talk about the fundamental concept of finances, of laying up. How do you lay up something that constantly seems to be leaking out? All right? Money coming in, money going out. How do you lay it up? Now I'm talking about saving just a little bit. Well, when I grew up, used a lot of colloquial expressions and things. you know, something you really like at the table, you're liable to take two or three big scoops of something as a child and then realize you can't eat it. And my mother's expression was, so your eyes were bigger than your belly. You heard that. You know, our wants can exceed our finances. And when our wants exceed our finances, we can't lay anything up. If all we can, I don't know how to say this. If all we can afford is rice and beans, then we don't order caviar. Right? So we have to discipline ourselves and adjust spending, or we can't lay up anything. I have to spend less than have coming in, or I can't lay anything up. That's the concept. How do you do that? You have to tell yourself no. Did you know that we're one of the few places, well, I've not been a lot of places, I'll just say it that way, but I have been to Europe, and I see it happening here incrementally. But did you know when you go in and get order something to eat here in the United States that the water is free? Y'all realize that? You know it's not free in Europe? Anita and I went with some friends of ours to a restaurant in Switzerland. And they measured the water out in liters. They brought there was four of us and two children, and they brought 1 liter of water to a table. That's slightly more than a quart for those of us that speak American. Did you know a liter of water is not enough for 4 adults and 2 children at a table? I mean, you can barely wet your whistle on a liter of water amongst 6 people. And the waiter come back and ask if we needed anything, and my wife said, I'd like some more water. And they took the bottle and they went to the tap and they filled it again. And they charged us on the bill. I don't know what I did with the receipt now, but they charged us by the liter of how much water they brought to the table. We think it's free, but you know, we can choose water here still and cost us less money. That's the point I want. We can avoid some expense. We can even drink tap water at the house. By law, our tap water, if it's provided by, now if you're on a well, that's different maybe, but our tap water has to be drinkable. Or they have to send out a warning and tell us it's not. You know, we can save money, cut expenses by drinking tap water. Y'all know what I mean by tap water. It comes out of the faucet. If we're going to lay anything up, then we have to be conservative. Conservative means we spend less than what we have coming in. My mother told me, as far as this, before I left home, and so I can put this in perspective. My mother went through the 8th grade, and she never completed high school until both of her children were raised, and then she went back to school and got her GED. I thought that was very amazing that she was able to do that. But all the time I was growing up, my mother had an 8th grade education. And she told me, don't ever let your payments for your house be more than one paycheck, 1 week's pay. 25%, a fourth of your monthly income. Don't do that. She said, if you'll keep your house payment, your rental payment, whatever it is, to 25% of your money, you'll make it. Eighth grade education, common knowledge. Well, it's not so common anymore. There are people in sales that'll sell you something that you can't afford. They'll sell you something that you have no business taking home with you. We have to allocate what our income is going for, or budget it, however you want to say it, before we start just... We can't get paid on Friday and be broke by Monday if we don't lay some of it up. We have to lay aside, I can't spend that. I got five more days before I get another paycheck, or however many more days. So I have to lay some money up. I can't overextend myself financially. And this is what it means to lay up, to save a little bit. I'm not advocating that you stuff your mattress with it, but or bury it in the backyard in a fruit jar. I'm just telling you that we should be able to, whether you're using debit cards and all of that as we do today, don't get yourself in a position where your money is spent almost before you make it. That's not sound. And it'll be hard for you to understand the economy of the gospel if your finances are a disaster. Because Jesus taught, and Paul taught, from a perspective of somebody following some discipline with their finances. All right? Let's turn to Matthew chapter 20. And I want to speak just a little bit about investing. Matthew chapter 20. And I want to look at verse 19. It says, I'm in the wrong chapter. Chapter 25. It'll read better if I get to the right page. Chapter 25, verse 20. And so he that had received five talents came and brought other five talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me five talents. Behold, I have gained beside them five talents more. So, y'all know the story here. It's the parable of the talents. And Jesus told this parable that the kingdom of heaven is like this. And what did he use to explain the kingdom of heaven? Money, finances. He brought this, it says there was a ruler, a lord, that he called his servants in, and he gave one servant five talents, and he gave another servant two talents, and he gave another servant one talent. And it says here that he went away, I believe it says, for a long time. Verse 19 says, after a long time the Lord of those servants cometh and reckoned with them. How long is a long time? How long do you think this was?
Months, maybe a year.
All right, I'm going to throw a number out there, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe it's more realistic. I'm going to explain why I give you that number. I think that this Lord was gone, the one that come back and reckoned with the servants, I think he was gone at least 7 years. That's a long time, isn't it? Now I'm going to explain why I think it was 7 years. Because he said here in verse 20, "And so he that received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents, saying, Lord, thou deliverest unto me 5 talents. Behold, I have gained more than them 5 talents, beside them 5 talents more." Did you know that a good investment in today's world will usually double in value in 7 years? All right? That's why I said I think he was gone 7 years. Not because he lived in the same time, but a good investment will increase, and at some point it's going to double. Might be 10 years, 7 to 10 years. I think he was gone 7 to 10 years, and he came back. There was plenty of time. If he was gone a month, and this guy had doubled the 5 talents, my first question would be, was that legal? You see what I'm saying? But a good solid investment will double in 7 to 10 years. So he's gone a long time and he come back. And the one servant had doubled. Two of them had. One of them got 2. One of them got 5 talents. Both of them doubled. Let's just talk about money. That's what we're talking about this morning. If we put money in an investment, it's not an investment if it's going down in value. We can't invest in something because we emotionally like it. We must invest in something that makes financial sense. Okay? That's long-term investment. It doesn't matter if you're investing $100 or a really, really large amount. Don't matter. But notice what happened to the one that got 1 talent. You remember what he did with it? He put it in a fruit jar and buried it in the backyard. That's not what it says. It says, "But he that received 1 went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money." Well, it could have been a fruit jar, but I don't think they had mason jars then. He dug a hole and he preserved that. Nobody got it. But what was the expectation if somebody, if you invest something 7 to 10 years, they all had the same time, right? 7 to 10 years, you come back and here's your stuff back. Well, what kind of trouble did he get into? In verse 24, it says, "Then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, here's your stuff." Verse 25, "I was afraid and went and hid thy talent in the earth, and lo, there thou hast that is thine. The Lord answered him and said unto him, Thou wicked and slothful servant, thou knewest that I reap where I have sowed not, and gather where I have not strawed. Thou oughtest therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received my own with usury." Exchangers, that sounds like maybe the market or stock market today, mutual funds. That sounds like the bank, a CD, I don't know, something that it would be in an interest bearing, there would have been at least a little bit of growth. It might not have doubled. The other people done something, they done some research and they invested it properly and it doubled. And this man, it gained nothing. You remember how we started this parable? Was Jesus really trying to teach money principles? No, he wasn't. He was assuming that everybody knew the money principles. So this morning we're trying to talk about the money principles because he taught the parable to teach a lesson that applied to spirituality and things about our soul. But the principle is, the concept is that your finances ought to be something that's an asset to us and not some chaos that we don't know how to tame this thing. All right? He said you should have at least taken that one talent and put it to the exchanger, so I could have got 2% interest or what, I don't know, something. It may have not doubled, but I got something for the trouble. Instead, you brought it back just like I gave it to you and you done nothing with it. That's why you don't put your money in a fruit jar and put it in the backyard. Do you need some laid up? Yes, you do. You need some that you can reach in. I don't know where you keep your cash, and that's not important. You may have a fake book on the bookshelf that you open up, and that's where you keep all your big bills. I don't know. It doesn't matter. But you need something where you can go and say, this is my extra money. But don't put it all there. There needs to be a ceiling to that, a limit to that. You got some money saved up? Then make it work for you a little bit. That's the concept that Jesus was depending on somebody else to know. It ought to be invested in something. Something besides something that would depreciate in value. You know what depreciates the fastest of anything that we could purchase? Anything with wheels on it. If it burns gasoline and it's got wheels on it, it don't even have to have wheels. You buy something without wheels that's got that uses gasoline, and it's going to go down in value. So it's got to be something else than that. We got to think about, what am I putting my money into? All right. Mattresses and fruit jars are below minimum expectation. That's what I want you to get out of this. Not saying you shouldn't have the fruit jar, the cookie jar, the bottom drawer of the dresser or whatever. I don't know. Well, it don't matter. I'd like to turn to Isaiah 55. And I would like to look at a verse in the Old Testament. He said, the prophet here said, ho, everyone, verse 1, that thirsteth, come ye to the waters. And he that hath no money, come ye, buy and eat. Yea, come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. What kind of lesson is he talking about? Spiritual lesson, right? Come to this place that you can get waters, you can buy, you can eat, and you don't have to pay for it. It's free. Okay? Wherefore, he said, do you spend money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which satisfieth not? Hearken diligently unto me, and eat ye that which is good, and let your soul delight itself in fatness. Why do you spend money for that which is not bread? So I'd like to talk about spending a little bit. Have you ever heard the term disposable income? You know what that means? It means you got money to spend, and if you spend it, oh, so well, so what? I didn't really lose. It's not that big a deal. Now, for the most of us, that's hard to come by. All of my life, it's been hard to come by disposable income to where, you know, you could spend that money, whatever it was, and it's like, well, it didn't turn out so good. All right. This is not a hit on anybody, okay? But it's July the 5th. You know what we do on July the 4th in the United States? We burn money. That's what we do. And I'm going to tell you, if you spend money to burn it, and you haven't got some laid up for the things that's real important, like food, clothing, shelter, and transportation, then don't do it. It needs to be disposable income. That's what it really needs to be. I'm just talking about the fundamental principle. He says, why do you spend money on that which is not bread? I mean, there's excitement. But how filling is this excitement? How satisfying long term is excitement? It needs to be disposable income. We spend. What if you go by? This is kind of close to home. You know, a bargain is not a bargain if you don't need the bargain. $5 rubber boots are not a bargain if they don't work the way you want way rubber boots need to work. I would rather spend $50, hear me out, on a pair of rubber boots that do what I need them to do than have 10 pair of $5 boots that don't do what I need them to do. Don't buy a bargain because something looks like it's a discounted price. Don't spend money, it says, which is not bread. If I'm spending on something that's not bread, that's not nourishment, it needs to be disposable income. All right? Yeah. Yeah. If I like hoarding stuff, it needs to be disposable income. I don't care if you're hoarding rubber boots or whatever it is. It needs to be disposable income. Something that I can live without, because you're going to live without it somehow, or starve to death, one of the two. So the money principle here is don't spend your money unnecessarily for something that's not contributing to your overall well-being. I'm not trying to put a straitjacket on any of us. You know, I'm really glad we've got ice water for the preacher. And if you wanted don't switch it over to pop, okay? Because sometimes it might lose its fizz by the end, and it sure wouldn't be good tonight. So to me, it's not, it's a waste of money, okay? There's no point in it. And I'm not trying to make us this, I got to make every penny count all the time. But sometimes we find ourselves in a place in life where we can't afford anything but tap water. We don't have any disposable income. We can't buy two firecrackers if we wanted to. Well, we could, but then maybe we'd have to do without lunch tomorrow. So we don't have the disposable income to buy firecrackers. And I'm not picking on firecrackers other than yesterday was the 4th. So I've done a little research. I'll try to wind this up for this morning. You know what the odds of winning the Powerball or Mega Million lottery is? You know what the odds are? What? 1 in 300 million. That's what AI says. You know what the population of the United States is? 342 million. You know what the conclusion I come to was? There's only 42 million people in the United States smart enough not to buy a ticket. All right? The odds, it's, why do you spend your money on something that's not bread? What's your odds of winning? The lottery in Missouri, you know what the odd chance are there? 1 in 5.2 million people is your odds of winning the Missouri lottery. You know how many people's in the state of Missouri? 6.27 million. You know what that tells me? There's only about 1 million Missourians that have made the conscious decision, I'm not going to invest in that. I'm not going to be one of the statistics, but there's 5.2 million that do. There's 5.2 million that buy tickets. And that's why there's such a slim odds. That's how many people don't play in Missouri. It's about 1 million. I'm thankful to be in the minority on that. I'd like to go to Luke, the 14th chapter. I'm sorry for being long-winded this morning. I want to look at the 14th chapter of Luke and begin at the 28th verse. Jesus' words here again. For which of you, intending to build a tower, sitteth not down first and counteth the cost, whether we have sufficient to finish it? Lest haply, after he hath laid the foundation and is not able to finish it, all that behold it begin to mock him, saying, this man began to build and was not able to finish. And then he starts talking about giving another illustration, but he's using money, he's using finances, something that should be common knowledge. Don't bite off more than you can chew. Make sure your eyes are not bigger than your belly. We know all those things. Don't take on something, a financial responsibility that you can't see your way through. All right? You got any credit cards? I do. More than I want. I'll tell you that right now. There's more plastic in my wallet than I ever thought I would have. Do you know how I handle that? I'm paranoid about making sure the bill is paid at the end of the month. Use it like a checkbook. If you can't pay it at the end of the month when the bill comes in, don't use it. Don't use a credit card for unapproved financing. Because that's what it is. You know what the rates are on those things? 20-some percent, 30% maybe. I don't know. It's robbery. In Proverbs 22:7, it says, "The rich ruleth the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender." You know what you're doing when you use a credit card and you can't pay the bill at the end of the month? You're saying, "I want to be your slave." That's what we're doing. I'm volunteering to be your slave. I'm going to swipe this card, and at the end of the month, I owe more than what I bought it for. And next month, I'm going to owe, and it's not going to be long, and whatever I bought, there is no way that it could have been worth that. The verse just before Proverbs 22:7, where it says, "A rich ruleth the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender," is 22:6. And that's the verse that says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he won't depart from it," I believe. We all know that one. We believe that's true, right? Then why wouldn't we believe that the seventh verse is true? When we borrow money, we are coming under the rules and the regulations of whoever loaned it to us. We're signing the line if whether we're swiping the card or we go down and pretend that we read all those papers for that home mortgage and we just signed where they put the little X's. If we do that, it's the same thing. We're agreeing to whatever their terms are. And somewhere in those terms, we're telling them, "You have the right to come and get my stuff that you own." That's what we say. If I don't pay for it, you got the right to come and get it. Or you got the right to take money out of my paycheck if I don't pay you. The wisest plan is don't do business with a lender. We ought to pay cash. Now, I want to define cash. You use a credit card, make sure you got a plan in place to pay for it. All of it. No interest. If you're, I've bought tools and equipment on 6 months, same as cash. I've done it multiple times. But I never did it if I didn't have a plan to pay for it before they charged me interest. You know what happens the day after the 6 months expires? They charge you interest all the way back to the time that you started the purchase. That's what happens. You buy a set of furniture for 12 months, same as cash, no zero APR, 12 months, same as cash, and you let it go to the 13th month, you know where they started the interest at? The date of purchase. You spend $1,000 on a recliner, and 12 months and 4 days later, you're going to go in and pay it off, and you take your $1,000 in there, and they're going to say, "Sorry, you owe us $1,200. That was 20% interest. That interest goes all the way back to the day you picked it up and took it home. Put that on a hook. That means remember it. If you don't have a plan to pay it off before that reckoning day, don't do it. Put your money in the fruit jar until you can. Put your money in the little interest-bearing savings account you got till you can. Financial planning should be a common knowledge thing. We ought to be able to plan and not get ourselves in desperation. I want to speak about one thing here, and I'm going to close for this morning. We've all been in those positions where someone needs help. Might be family, might be friends, it might be somebody that you've just come in contact with and you want to help them. Financially sound advice is this. Don't finance your help to somebody else. If you can't afford it, if you don't have it, I'm not saying you can't go back to rice and beans and water if you're really passionate about helping somebody else. But I'm just going to use a real plain, simple fact here. Don't go fill up their propane tank and swipe your credit card when you don't have a plan to be able to pay for it. Don't make payments on your assistance to somebody else. That's not biblically sound advice. All right? Going to build a tower? Let's count our money. Let's have a plan. Let's make sure that we don't get ourselves upside. You know, they'll finance. You know what it means to be upside down in a car? It means you owe more for it than it could ever possibly. It's when people walk in and they buy a $10,000 car and they finance negative equity on the other car, and they walk out with a car that was worth $8,500 and they just financed $12,500 on it. They're in trouble. Financially, they're in trouble. And I'm not, just so you know, I'm not going to put gas in your car if I don't have money to pay for it when a credit card bill comes in. I'm just not going to do it because I don't have it. I can't help you. I want to, but I can't. If I don't have the money to pay for it, I'm not going to spend it. So, Lord, help us. I know this. I hope we could extend this more. We could have discussion on this. And I want us to be able, we must be able to be accountable for our money. And the scripture teaches us, want to build something? Let's get the piggy bank out. Let's see what we got. We got money and we're not building something, then it ought to be doing something and not just sitting in a fruit jar. What are you spending? Are you spending for no bread? Are you spending your money on things that's beneficial, that'll put your life in a better position? Lord, help us. Pray for me. I need to live to my own preaching. So let's all be encouraged.